Blog Talk Radio.
I decided to play that song today. That's Krista Branch. She is known as the Tea Party Musician out of Indiana. She's a friend of mine who runs the Fort Worth, Indiana Tea Party out there. I've got a couple of local announcements. We've got a Tea Party. Florence is having a meeting, and this is going to be Saturday, October 29th from 9:30 to 10:30 at Basin's Restaurant. Now, the reason why this is important, because the speaker, former Speaker of the House, I should say, Newt Gingrich, the presidential Republican candidate, will be at the restaurant and speaking to the Tea Party people. If you're interested, again, this is Saturday, this coming Saturday, the 29th, from 9:30 till 10:30 at Basin's Restaurant. It's located at 704 South Irby Street in Florence, South Carolina. The breakfast will be a Dutch treat of $10, so they ask you to please purchase the breakfast. Obviously, if you're going to be at the restaurant, you want to solicit the business, and be sure to leave them a tip. So it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun, but Florence is about 4 hours away from me, so I'm not going to be able to make that. But I hope anyone else here in South Carolina will try to do that. This other one, it's not local, but it's kind of near and dear to me because it's about our military. There's a website called America'sMightyWarriors.org. It was set up by the mother of the first Navy SEAL killed in Iraq. But it seems like his sister, who was also in the military, got married 2 years ago, and her husband is also in the military. But because of that, they both immediately after the wedding got stationed in two different places, and they were not able to take a honeymoon. So now 2 years later, they're getting together next month to finally have their honeymoon. So if you go to americasmightywarriors.org, you can make a small donation to help them with their honeymoon. They're going to be going over to California, to Disneyland, and then be at the Palazzo in Las Vegas. Her father, Mark Dewey, is a Gold Star father, and he's asking anyone that is willing to give a little help so that at least they can finally have a honeymoon. So please check out americasmightywarriors.org and look at Mark's sister, Brandon's sister. She serves in the Navy, and her husband also serves in the Navy, and they've both been deployed. They're finally coming home for their honeymoon, so please give them a hand. Now, you're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Anne, the Radio Chick, and I have one of my most favorite co-hosts here, Pete Cannici, who is also running for Senate out in Michigan. So welcome and good afternoon, Pete. How are you doing today?
Good, Anne. How are you doing?
All right. Did you catch Herman Cain's new online ad?
No, I didn't see it.
That's why I played that opening song. He uses Krista Branch's song, I Am America, in the ad. And if anyone's interested in any of Krista's music, I put it up on the show page. It's KristaBranch.com. Krista's spelt with a K. And she's fantastic music, absolutely fantastic. But this is his new ad. You have to see it because it has his campaign manager on it. His name is Mark Block. And he's standing there in front, and he's talking to the camera. And when he gets done with the camera, he takes a puff on a cigarette and blows it. And then the final scene, you see Herman Cain looking at you, and you know how he gets that little sly smile? And that's the end of it. But you got to listen to the cat. I'm sorry I can't play the visual, but I think it's a fantastic commercial because just Herman Cain's smile kind of like steals it. But I don't know what the deal is with the cigarette, but this is his new ad. Okay.
Mark Block here. Since January, I've had the privilege of being the Chief of Staff to Herman Cain and the Chief Operating Officer of the Friends of Herman Cain. Tomorrow is one day closer to the White House. I really believe that Herman Cain will put United back in the United States of America. And if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be here. We've run a campaign like nobody's ever seen. But then, America's never seen a candidate like Herman Cain. We need you to get involved because together we can do this. We can take this country back.
I love it. I love it. You know, the whole thing is about Herman Cain. He is so completely unconventional. And right now, all the news media is picking up on this ad, and they're playing with it. They're running all over with it. I've caught it up on ABC, CBS, CNN. And matter of fact, ABC has an article up on their website, and it turns out this guy, Block, has a little controversy behind him. So in Wisconsin, he was fined and banned from politics for 3 years and forced to pay $15,000 after being accused by the Wisconsin State Board of Elections for violating election law in 97 as a campaign manager to state Supreme Court. You never know what's going to come out of Herman Cain's camp.
I just saw the ad, and the ad is good. As far as the cigarette, I think he just put that in there just so people would take notice of it and try and figure out why the cigarette was in there.
I was thinking maybe he's trying to blow some smoke up here.
That's very possible. That's a much better explanation. I totally agree.
Oh, man. Like I said, you never know what's going to come out of Herman Cain's camp. You know, there's another thing they're saying, let's see, Jimmy Brazil, who's Kane's president, vice president of National Field and Political Preparations. Where did they come up with these titles?
I don't know.
Once worked for Hillary Clinton and is godfather to her nephew Simon Rodman.
Hmm.
So he goes across the board. Let's see. Kristen Otto Herzog, as a bodyguard, was bodyguard to Mel Gibson's ex-wife, Oksana.
Hmm. It sounds like he gets the best person for the job.
That sounds like. He doesn't care, you know, what party line they're in.
Exactly.
So it's going to make an interesting campaign. Have you caught Rick Perry's new tax plan?
No, what's that?
He now has a flat tax he's offering, but you have an option. You can option out of the flat tax. It's 20%. So you can choose to continue to pay your taxes the old-fashioned way, going through all the regulations and everything, or you can choose the flat tax of 20%. However, he gives you deductions for your mortgage. There's a couple of deductions in there. So if you're in the poverty level or you're lower middle class, you basically aren't going to be worrying about paying your taxes.
Right.
If you're someone that's, say, for example, $500,000 or more, then you're going to be feeling a little bit of an ouch, but not as badly, supposedly, as if you were to go through the regular tax process.
Exactly.
I want to see the whole thing fleshed out.
I heard that program from someone else who gave the option of either paying normal income taxes or the flat tax. The flat tax was 17%, if I recall. But my understanding was there were no deductions whatsoever associated with it.
Well, I'm thinking Gingrich was saying one at 15%, but allowing for your mortgage deduction and something else.
My feeling is that I just know that taxes are very, very unpopular. But the big problem we have is spending, and we have to make sure that we cut spending, because no matter what we do with taxes, it's going to be revenue neutral, because we're taking as much money out of the economy now as we can, and they can rearrange how we take the money out, but we can't take more money out than 20% of gross domestic product. And we have to address spending, because if we don't address spending, it makes no difference how we collect taxes. We're still going to be imploding from our debt.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's driving me crazy about his jobs bill. Now, Pete, just so everyone knows that you
are... Who's his jobs bill? The Obama's jobs bill?
Yeah.
That's right.
Just so everyone knows that you are running for Senate in Michigan, so a lot of things that you're saying is your knowledge through your campaign. Your site is for your campaign is?
www.peter, P-E-T-E-R, Konechy, KONETCHY.com.
How is the campaign going?
It's going good. That's why we've been out. I've been in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan for the last 2 or 3 days doing a bunch of meetings. We had some good press, you know, meetings, and we had some different GOP meetings and Tea Party meetings and interviews that we went to, which worked out real well. And then we've been running around on Saturday and Sunday as well as last night and tonight. So that's why I haven't been up on, you know, all of the debates. I kind of miss a lot of them because we're traveling, although I'd like to see some, you know, if possible. And then once we get back, we're normally doing a lot of other work, so I don't have a chance to see a lot of information, not nearly as much as I'd like.
Mm. That's a shame, but there's a lot going on out there, and we're going to try to get you caught up on this.
I appreciate it.
Because I'm going to get your feedback on this.
Good.
Now, I have read the jobs bill, and I read that when it first came out, and I've got the whole entire thick folder sitting next to me, so if anyone wants to know any section of it, I have it here. There's a section in there that Obama has been pushing, and that's the infrastructure bank. That's the bank for all the public works projects. But right now, nothing is shovel-ready. Everything he's got planned for this is all further down the road. It's not going to create jobs today. It may create jobs, say, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. But there's a problem with the infrastructure bank. It's going to force states into construction projects that they may not want, afford, or need. But he wants to create this huge bank now so that the federal government is going to dictate to the states once again.
I think that's terrible. We don't need government funding of any project whatsoever, in my opinion. we know from history, whether it's Kennedy, Reagan, or Bush, that whenever you cut repressive taxes and let the people who actually earn the money invest the money into their business through additional capital purchases, hiring new people, advertising, or whatever, that the economy excels. What Obama is doing and his helpers in Washington is they're taking as much capital out of the private sector as possible to waste it on their own pet political projects, and they're destroying the economy. And we know that through Solyndra. We had that $500 million that was pumped into Solyndra, but that's just wasted. And we have a lot of other green energy projects that are doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, you know what really drives me the craziest about this? With this infrastructure bank, you're asking, for example, the citizens of Michigan to pay for a project that's in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
That's not right.
Nope.
You know, and who's to say that I know better what California needs? You know, let the states decide. Bring it. Just stop stomping on the 10th Amendment.
Well, that's why our founders wanted to guard against any centralized government control. So they specifically said, as you just mentioned in the 10th Amendment, that whatever is not a national issue, such as defense, immigration, Article 1, Section 8 duties, falls to the states. And the federal government has no authority whatsoever, in my opinion, to extract money from individual states through income taxes, to store it, take out their bureaucratic expenses, and then redistribute it as they deem proper. It's just ridiculous. We should keep the money, as you said, just in the state and let the states decide what they want to do with it.
That's what I hope that we can eventually get our Congress and everyone to go back to.
Well, that's what I'm fighting for. So I know the greatness of the United States is because of limited government. It's obvious, and we proved that through the first 150 years of our existence. And now the government's changing its philosophy entirely, totally ignoring the Constitution and imposing its will into society, and it's destroying it. So unless we turn it around, we're not going to exist anymore. And I know we have the greatest nation on earth. I want my kids to have a safe and secure nation, prosperous nation, not a centralized control socialist society.
Oh, man. When you just said the right word. In the bill, there is a section in there where they sell off FCC wavelength spectrums. Have you heard about that?
Yes, a little bit.
Well, what it does is it takes out channels 2 to 52. So that means all local stations will end up being shut down.
Hmm.
No, here it is. That's what this piece of paper I was looking for. You know, talk about creating jobs. Isn't this one way to actually cut jobs? Now, how will local stations survive? How do you get the local service to the communities? You know, something like I was just talking about, you know, the Tea Party meeting or a local charity event or, you know, a public auction or an art display. You take that away from a small community, and the only way you get information is now through the federal level.
I totally agree.
So what they want to do is sell off channels 2 to 54 that use for broadcast, and they claim it's to open up spectrums for emergency response. But meanwhile, they're saying in Reno alone, when he announced this job bill, they did a survey. Between 8 to 10% of the people living in Reno will no longer receive any TV whatsoever. And the only TV you'll get is through cable or satellite. But if you call in the next 15 minutes, this is what we'll do for you. The taxpayer will pay for these people's cable or satellite TV.
Oh, boy. That's terrible. But I know you're right, because I live in a real small town. It's called Roscommon, Michigan, and we had one newspaper up here where we got local news from it, and that closed down. So now we have a newspaper that comes out every 2 weeks, but I don't buy it. But we lose our local news coverage. And the exact same concept is going to happen with what you're saying. And that's there's no reason for it. Whenever the government does anything, this really irritates me, is they force the people to accept their solution. With the free market, you have millions of people that are looking at the same problem, and millions of people are coming up with the solutions to the problem. And if they come up with a good solution, then people voluntarily accept the good solution and pay them money for it, just like Windows, the iPods, you know, any solution. You're never forced into it. the government has such terrible ideas, for the most part, they force their solution on the public because the public will not accept it any other way. And that's destroying our nation again. We have to change it.
So that we definitely have to do. And, you know, talking about the FCC, they've got another little brainchild that very many few people know about. Do you know what's going to happen on November 9th?
What's that?
They are going to have a nationwide testing of the emergency alert system. Nationwide, they're going to shut down all media and run what they claim is a two-minute thing, but it's going to be somewhere between 2 to 5 minutes that all media, TV, radio, and what was the other one? Electronic. What was the third one? Well, they're going to be doing a major testing. I have the FCC thing here. They're going to be testing stations at the national level. These then will rebroadcast on the local level throughout the country. And here we go. Television and radio broadcasters, satellite radio, satellite television providers, as well as cable television, and they call it wireline video providers.
Hmm.
And that sounds like the Internet.
All right, that's what it sounds like, cell phones and things like that.
Yeah, so on November 9th, they're going to do a nationwide test on this system. But what it basically does, it shuts everything down for anywhere from 2 to 5 minutes. Now, is that a scary thought?
It is. If they can shut it down then they can shut it down anytime they so choose, if they determine it's in the national interest.
Yeah, if anyone wants to know about this, you can go directly to the FCC.gov website, and they have the emergency alert system nationwide test information up there. And I pulled this directly off of their website. And when I pulled it up two days ago, they have a little clock underneath there for the alert system test, and it said 17 days remaining. That means it's 15 days remaining, 2 weeks and 1 day. So if anyone's going to, November 17th is a Thursday. No, November 9th, I'm sorry. November 9th is a Wednesday. All right, I don't have to worry about my station being cut off. I'll still be able to broadcast the day before and the day after.
Well, good. You're probably the reason they're doing it. They probably said it's dangerous information coming from the station.
Southern Sense caused all the trouble. You're listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I want to welcome everyone into the chat room. We've got Beverly, Doc Jones, we got Chaplain Steve, we got a guest, we got Mike Bonner and Tesler. Matter of fact, I was a guest on Michael's show last night, and we were talking about where are the new youth leaders coming from. And I was trying to explain to him, you know, reaching into various areas of your locality, whether it's the school, the churches, the youth centers. Look for kids that are starting to excel and then take them and mentor them and nurture them. And that's where our new leader is going to be coming from. Mike had an excellent show last night. I suggest everyone stop in and visit his show. He's new. He's only had 8 broadcasts, but I think he's going to go far. But Pete, what made you decide to step forward? And because you weren't a politician at all.
No, I'm not a politician. I've been working for the last 35 years providing software to lawyers. I have a very small company, between 2 and 7 people. We have about 200 long-term law firms that we have across the nation that we provide software to, time billing and accounting software. But I'm just looking at the nation, and for the last 25 years, I've been politically aware. And I've talked to different politicians. I've written letters to the editor. I've just been involved in my local community. And I can see that our nation is on the wrong path. So with Obama, it's really crystallized the fact that we either have to fight to retain the form of government that our founders provided to us, or we're going to lose it. And there's so much momentum towards losing it, just towards having the United States become another, you know, normal, socialized, big government nation within the world. And I can't accept that. And when I was young in the 80s, I remember Ronald Reagan said, freedom is never more than one generation from extinction. I could never, ever consider having the United States lose its prominence as a world superpower. But now I see it being drained from us. I see our credit rating being downgraded. I see our debt skyrocketing. I see our deficit spending ballooning as far as we can see in the future. And the problem is it's all wasted. And the government is actually, in my opinion, destroying the nation because it's not allowing us to develop our energy. It's not allowing us to manage the free market. The government shouldn't be in the free market whatsoever. The free market manages itself. The business community is so hostile now in the United States that it just makes sense that global enterprises are moving overseas where they have better business environments. I mean, who could ever imagine that the United States would have a hostile business environment that would force people to move away? So everything the government's doing is it's destroying our nation as I see it. And I love this nation. I know it's the best nation in the world. Our Constitution is a perfect form of government for free people. And I just can't sit around anymore and watch it be destroyed. And I've met all the other Senate candidates here in Michigan, and they're all good people, but none of them understand the concept of limited government. None of them understand the concept of personal liberty and the greatness of the free market system. So that's why I'm running, because I want to impose those, you know, constitutional values back into government.
Well, you said it very, very well, Peter. We got a caller in on the line, area code 906. You're live on the air with Annie and Pete. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, this is actually Pete's campaign manager, Keith.
Hi, Keith.
Hi, Keith. How are you doing?
Hi, how are you doing? I'm doing
good.
Sure? Actually, I was a little behind on the broadcast. I'm listening to it online, and I was just got to the November 9th shutdown, and I was just having a conversation with somebody about that this morning. Which, how scary is that, you know? I don't know the specifics about Fox pulling off of DirecTV, but I do know that Mr. Obama has been at war with Fox since day one. And, you know, personally, this conversation that we had was, okay, we know that there are no conservative newspapers. If you can think of one, please tell me. But the newsprint has been taken over. And television would be the next thing to work on, Fox being probably the last, even though they came so much center, you know, the last hope of any what I would consider conservative television or news reporting, radio being last, and internet that would work somewhere in behind, you know, in with that. But this test on November 9th is very scary. You know, in communist countries, they block the World Wide Web. You know, they still have internet, but they block the global aspect of that internet. And this is what I see, you know, the test being actually performed for.
That is true. And it's amazing that you just said something about the government doing that. Ahmadinejad is now creating an internet system just for Iran. With that in mind...
Yeah, and actually, I got some news this morning, and I won't name any specifics or any names, but there is a Tea Party member who's a businessman who's a you know, internet expert who has just successfully created. Okay, think of the internet as a pipe, right? And the World Wide Web is just one of the threads in that pipe. And the government being able to shut that down in these communist countries, you know, basically takes away that communications, global communications, or anything that they might find out that's not putting, you know, put out by the government. But there is a Tea Party member who's created a thread in that pipe that the Tea Party would be able to use to communicate via the internet that would not be able to be shut down by the government. So that's pretty exciting stuff.
Ooh, if you get more information, shoot that over to me, Keith. That sounds interesting.
Exactly. There's going to be, when it's put out there, there's going to be a webinar, and I would certainly invite you to that.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. Because what I underlined when I was reading this off of the FCC website, and again, I put the link up in the chat room there so you can go directly to where it has the emergency alert system nationwide test on there. In there it says, quote, ensuring that the EAS architecture functions properly and will benefit emergency alerting at all levels of government.
Hmm.
So they specify government control.
Well, and any, you know, anybody thinking that this is going to be of any benefit to the general public is, you know, I've got a bridge to sell you. Yeah, some pretty scary stuff, you know. I'm sure that you've seen several of the movies or publications out there, you know, comparing the steps being taken here with you know, steps taken by the Nazi Party or you know, throughout history. You know, history's always repeating itself. And, you know, this is just one more of those steps,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Well, when they do this test, the one alert goes off from one station, and then it's supposed to snowball in from the next station to the next station. One of the things they're
right.
looking at is to see whether or not a station will rebroadcast that alert. In other words, shut it down, everything, and send the alert out. And they don't say whether or not they're going to penalize any stations that fail to respond. But there's sort of something's inferred in the way they wrote it that makes me wonder whether or not, they say the FCC is an independent agency that grants licenses.
Right.
And when they say that,
they own the bandwidth, you know.
Yeah, so when they stress that in the fact they're explaining how this will snowball down from one station going locally, nationally, you know, so on and so forth, when they mention the fact that they grant licenses in this description, makes me get the feeling they're trying to say, hey, listen, if you don't participate, you may just have a little problem with your license.
Right.
Right. Yeah, and the FCC is the ultimate big brother in communications, you know. I don't want to sound too alertist or anything like that. Like I said, I just had this conversation with somebody who's letting me in on the gentleman that was going to have the internet ability for conservatives/Tea Party members. You know, it's obviously he's a Tea Party guy, so that's where it's coming from. But it would probably ultimately be people that want to know the truth, you know, that they'd have this ability to communicate should this happen. But there again, that's all pretty scary stuff.
It's extremely scary. I mean, the problem is we have – our nation is the greatest nation on earth, and our founders granted us the First Amendment, obviously, because they knew the importance of freedom of speech, freedom of free communication outside of government control. And this smacks of Nazism, and we can't have it. And I'm just so frustrated because the people of the United States have to wake up and they have to say, you know, what's going on, and don't allow our government to do it. We have to make sure that we vote out of office any representative that's encouraging or supporting this type of action, because we get the government we deserve. And I don't want this government.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm going through, and there's something I forgot to underline. But they have this paragraph where it's highlighted. It says, where does media communications-based alerting fit within the development of, quote, next-generation alerting systems like PLAN and the availability of social networking sites as tools for emergency alerting? They're already in our telephones. They're already in our cell phones. You know, they're already there. Now they want to go into the social network, such as Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, BTR. That would be the next step to force the emergency alerting and shutdown through this.
Well, this is something I wanted to discuss with my boss, but I didn't plan on calling in the radio or the show to discuss it with him. But anyways,
no one will say anything about it, Keith. You can tell me.
Yeah. In confidence in how many listeners you have. Yeah. But anyways, I just wanted to bring up that point because, like you said, I was at that point of the show. And I was wondering if you were going to bring up the November 9th thing, and I'm sure glad that you did. Once again, of course, we want everybody to support Peter, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And send money, lots of money.
Well, we got.
I can let you two go. I just wanted to bring up that point, and I'll certainly keep you informed on any efforts to keep an open line of communication. I would wonder how the amateur radio people are affected by this.
That's a good question. That is a good question, because a lot of us will use cell phones or, you know, landlines or whatever to call in, but others will go through the internet, say like Skype or Gmail, to call into their shows. And it would be interesting to see how it would affect, because they called it the wireline. What was the phrase, Pete? I forget how it went. Wireline something or other.
Something or other. I'm just trying to find it.
A wireline video providers.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's internet. To me, from what I understand, but I happen to know an expert in the amateur radio, because amateur radio is kind of your last line of communications when something bad, really bad happens. Those folks can go back to, you know, Morse code if they have to. But I'd be interested in knowing how they're affected by this November 9th shutdown, if they have to comply or if they're allowed to run within their bandwidth.
Now, that's an interesting thought, especially with that now the new 4G and 3G you have out there. Would that be considered part of that also?
I'm sure it would. Yes, I'm sure it would.
Now, that's very, very scary. That means that every single individual that has any sort of communication, whether or not it's a telephone or the internet, I'd like to see how they would control ham radio, though. That's a little bit harder. Matter of fact, it's making me wonder whether or not I can find some.
Well, there again, I think it would be a participation at your risk of your license, because you're licensed by the FCC to operate ham or amateur radio.
Hmm. But how many people bootleg?
Well, I'm sure there's bootlegging. Maybe they're doing this to identify where the bootlegging comes from easier. I don't know. There's a lot of things up in the air, but I don't like the fact that they're practicing a government blackout, per se, just to see if it works for emergency services or the Department of Homeland Defense.
The problem is, if they wanted to just alert the population as to what was happening, all they'd have to do is put out a press release, you know, and every single television and radio station would broadcast that, and people could get the information if they wanted it. So the information, in my opinion, isn't to inform the people or test the emergency network. It's to, as Keith said, just shut down the network, and that's very, very scary.
That is.
Well,
that
some points to ponder today, anyways.
Yeah.
I actually have to get back to work. There's been two phones ringing here. I've burned up two phones already working for Peter this morning. I should get back to that. But I just wanted to bring that up. And
I think Keith is asking for a raise is what he's doing.
that could be. That could be. Thank you for letting me call in.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Keith.
Hope to talk to you in the future.
Oh, you're always welcome on.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you, Keith. All right, that's Keith. That's Pete Konecny's campaign manager. And what I was starting to say when Keith did call in, one of the things we were talking about on Mike's show last night was whether or not people such as you have the ability to connect to youth. But you have an amazing ability. You went and did some high schools with a phenomenal turnout, right?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, Pete.
as far as high school events?
Yeah. Was it high school or college events that you went to?
It was a college event. And I have gone to some college events. The nicest thing was we went to a place called Mackinac Island. There was a Republican leadership conference there just a while ago. And there was a group of high school kids from Northern Michigan University who wanted to come to it. But at the last instance, their funding was denied. So what happened is they were calling around different places to see if they could get funding. So they contacted us, and we were able to help them out. So we got them a hotel room and things like that so they could stay. And then some other organizations also chipped in, and they were able to come. But they were a real, real good group of people, and talked to them, liked them, and they helped with our campaign, and I'm hoping to go back up to see them again. So, and we do have some good groups. There's a group down in Wayne State University, a great guy named Kenneth Lloyd, who's a friend. He's the president of the chapter of the Young Republicans, and we're set to go down there and talk to them. You know Cool Mike. He has a whole group of young people that are working with him, and I want to tap into that network.
Yeah, he was saying that he watched you when you were working the room, as we call it, and he said you had an amazing rapport with young people, even though you and I are very close in age. I think
we're both young, aren't we?
It's
hard. I know. My wife and I are about the same age, and she's just past 29, I think.
Do you know how conservative I am? Whenever AARP sends me something in the mail,
right,
I take a red magic marker, and I take their return envelope, and I put across it in red magic marker, how many times do I have to say no? What part of N-O do you not understand? And mail it back to them on their dime.
Right. You should put something in there, like fill it up with sand or put something heavy in the envelope.
Well, no, if I put sand in, they'll probably think it's anthrax or something, you know?
Right. Well, they just put someone else's return address on the envelope.
Oh, no, a piece of AstroTurf.
That's good. No, but one nice thing about being young, like 29, is when I go into McDonald's now, sometimes they even offer me a senior coffee, which at first I was kind of offended, but now I kind of like getting the senior coffee.
Because you're fiscally conservative.
I'm fiscally conservative, that's right. But the nice thing is getting back to the conversation, when I quote-unquote work the room, I don't work the room falsely. When I talk to people, I try to be sincere and I try to find out what they're talking about. And I can't spend a lot of time, but when we go through parades and things like that, and I love parades because they're not a political venue, they're just people who are for a celebration, 4th of July celebration or something like that. And I talk to people of all political affiliations, and the great majority of them are conservative at heart. I tell them, you know, that we have the greatest country in the world. It's great, in my opinion, because of limited government and personal responsibility and unlimited personal potential. Most of them give me the thumbs up. They give me, you know, very encouraging signs. Every once in a while, someone says that they don't want to talk to Republicans. They like big government and things like that, but it's very, very few. And that's what I really enjoy. I enjoy doing.
It is amazing because I also find when I start talking to people young, either in college or you know, just coming out of high school or something like that, I'll mention something, and they'll look at me like I've got four eyes on. And I says, well, aren't you aware of X, Y, Z? And they says, oh, no. And then I start talking to them, and they say, well, how come they didn't teach us in school? And I said, because they don't want you to know. They don't want you to think. They want to tell you what to think. Now that you're an adult, it's time for you to start thinking on your own. Oh, where can I get this information? I says, don't trust me. You can go and look it up in the library, or I can give you a bunch of internet sites, or just Google it on your own. Don't let me tell you where to look. Just put a search in there and sit down and start reading. But don't believe everything that you read on the internet. Trust certain sources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Wikipedia does not always have accurate information, but I find usually they're pretty close. Encyclopedia Britannica or things like that. I says, yeah, but also look for other media sources. You know, when you read, say, for example, Time magazine, once you read their article, then go over to Newsweek. Read both sides. You know, don't take one person's word for it. And it's amazing how all of a sudden someone will go, hey, maybe I'm not so liberal after all.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something she's saying is right. And like I love telling the story about a local attorney over here. He and I got into a sort of a little pissing contest because he's all pro, Obamacare. And I said, well, you've got to realize there's certain things in there which makes it reprehensible. And then as things turned around, we're sitting one day next to each other on the bar stool. And
at the local bar.
And, you know, he barely said hi to me when I sat down next to him. So I said, all right, he's still pissed off about the argument we had. And Fox News was up there. And then all of a sudden he's yelling at the TV because everything I was telling him was coming true. And he's going, I can't believe those idiots, blah, blah, blah. And I can't believe I voted for that person and so forth. And I nudged him in the side with my elbow and I said, maybe you are a Tea Party person after all. I got a free drink out of it.
But like you say, people don't know what's going on. They hear free health care. You know, we're going to provide free health care to everyone that needs it. You'll be able to keep your own provider. All these lies, and they're just lies after lie after lie. But people accept it, and it's not true. And that's the sad, sad part of what's going on.
There's something to the effect that by, I believe, 2019, 85% of the poor, not the poor, but the lower class, whatever, would be forced into Medicaid. Not into Obamacare, but Medicaid. And already they're talking about with Medicaid putting in deductibles, putting in copayments, restricting your visits, and a whole mess of other things they're looking at now into Medicaid, just so they can start to try to recoup their money on this. They realize Obamacare is going to be Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, everyone's waking up and going, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And now any treatment you have has to go through these boards. So the doctor no longer has the final say on your treatment.
That's terrible. I know we've had conversations on your show before talking to doctors, and the doctors have no control. They have to follow whatever the centralized government bureaucracy tells them.
I've played a piece from Dr. David Janda, and anyone wants to look him up, his last name is J-A-N-D-A, Dr. David Janda. And I think he was campaigning for Vitter. I'm not sure who it was he was campaigning for. But he was talking about Obamacare. And he had a conversation with the people that were handling it, you know, pushing it through the legislation, people that had had a hand in writing it. And he said, you know, if I don't listen to what the panel says and treat my patient the way you tell me how to treat them, what's going to happen? Oh, we're going to fine you, I think it was like $500. He's like, oh, all right, fine, no big deal. They said, oh, wait a minute, but if you do it a second time, we're going to fine you $100,000.
That's right.
And he said, and if it does it a third time, they will put him in jail.
That's right. Plus, if he wants to leave voluntarily because he doesn't want to put up with the bureaucracy, they could fine him, if I recall, it was $7.5 million a year. Because every single file he had in his office, they could fine him a certain number of dollars for each file in the office, and it came out to about $7.5 million a year, if I recall from one of the conversations.
Mm. Oh, man. But everyone wanted it. Now they got it. Let's see what
they're
going to
do. No. I think you're wrong there because, I mean, going through the discussion, the great majority of the people in the United States did not want it. I think close to 70% of the people said, no, we don't want federalized health care, but the government pushed it through on us anyways.
That's not what Pelosi said.
Well, then I stand corrected. No, excuse me.
Now, so, also, on a lighter note, have you caught this thing Obama did? He wanted to go back into Twitter and everything else and prove he's internet savvy. And this thing that he had for his infrastructure campaign on his jobs bill, he has it where we can't wait, you know, hashtag we can't wait. Well, he put it up on Twitter, and they had his staff twittering these things about the job bill, trying to get people out there pushing for the job bill, telling them to call their elected officials, and they used hashtag we can't wait. It backfired. It backfired big time. I went up on Twitter last night, and I've got a couple of counts on there. And I went and I looked at the hashtag, we can't wait. This thing was scrolling so fast, you couldn't read it. You, even when you tried to freeze the scrolling, so much was backing up that it was automatically advancing on you. And it, I'm telling you. And some of the ones that I was putting up there, we can't wait for the fare tax. And,
oh.
And people were putting up their answers. And one of them I put up was, we can't wait for Obama to leave office. And if anyone is out there in the chat room, think of we can't wait things. Just post them in the chat room because I'm sure there's a lot of them. Pete, come up with a couple we can't wait.
Let's see. We can't wait. Well, I like that 2012 election. We can't wait till Obama's gone. That's a perfect one. We can't wait till Pelosi's gone. Reid's gone.
We can't wait for secure borders.
That's right. So
we can't wait for jobs going over to stop jobs going overseas.
We can't wait till the FCC is shut down.
We can't wait for the EPA to be shut down.
That's right. We can't wait till ARP dies of old age, AARP.
Well, we'll put Obamacare in charge of the AARP, and that'll cure it.
They can get a free little scooter.
Well, now, Mary, she put it up, we can't wait till the Democrats die. I can't say that. We can't wait until the Democrats have an epiphany. Okay, until they realize they're wrong. We can't wait, drill here, drill now.
That's a good one. I can't wait till, drill here, drill now. That's very, very important.
How about, we can't wait for the end of the Department of Education and the stopping of dumbing down of America.
I agree. The Department of Education, I think, is the most destructive department in government because it's destroying many, many generations of school kids. They have no idea what's great about the United States, you know, why we are special above all other nations on earth. They learn that we're just, you know, one of many. They teach diversity rather than patriotic pride.
That's true. That is true. Let me see. What else do I have here? We can't wait for gas to go below $2.
I keep on telling my wife I'm waiting until I see 99 cents. I don't want to fill up till I see 99 cents per gallon.
When you started driving, how much was it?
Well, I remember way back, and again, you have to remember that I'm only 29 years old. But I remember the Jimmy Carter energy embargo from OPEC. And the gas there, it was 75 cents a gallon when we were filling up, and that was terrible. But the money was much more valuable way back then. But when I was very, very little, we had like 15, 16 cents a gallon. My dad used to get a dollar's worth of gas.
Oh, man, that brings back the Jack Benny commercials. Do you remember those? Who was it, Sunoco? Or I forget who the gas station he was, the company he was advertising. But he'd always pull in, and they'd say, fill it up, Mr. Benny. He goes, no, I'll take a dollar.
And that probably put in, you know, half a tank or three quarters of a tank.
No, when I started driving, I seem to remember 55, 65 cents. And I know I'm a little bit younger than you, but I remember that. But also the with Jimmy Carter, when he had the rationing, oh, man, what a pain in the neck that was. Even when on one day, certain days of the week, and odd license plates went on different days of the week, and the lines would be around the block. Now, Mary Brockman's putting up there, I remember 25 cents worth at a time, and her I Can't Wait is I Can't Wait Till People Wake Up. That's a good one. That's 2012.
That's right, 2012.
That is a good one. All right, our phone lines are open, so if you will, give us a call in. It's 917-889-3675, and the chat room's got a lot going on in there. We have, let's see, who else joined us? Measure of Faith. We got Perry Steele. Unfortunately, Invisible Conservative Thomas is having a problem with his sound system, so he can join the chat room, but he can't hear the show, unfortunately, because Thomas has his own show here up on Blog Talk. Let's see. What else do we have here? Let's see. What else can we wait for?
Let's see. What else can we wait for? Maybe we can wait for the I can't wait until the IRS has gone away.
Oh, yes. That is true. That is absolutely true. Let me see. What else do we have here for today? We got the fail. And, matter of fact, the Heritage Foundation has an excellent article on the fail. Let's see. Oh, here we go. When they were talking about We Can't Wait, he wrote, let's see. I'm here to say that we can't wait for an increasingly dysfunctional Congress to do its job. This is what Obama said when he came out with the I Can't Wait or We Can't Wait. This is his excuse for a We Can't Wait. He said, this is his quote, I'm here to say we can't wait for an increasingly dysfunctional Congress to do its job. Where they won't act, I will.
Right, I heard that. And it's really amazing that he's trying to distance himself from the dysfunctional government. And now he's blaming everything on Congress rather than on his policies, which is terrible.
Yeah, now he's trying to push through executive order, but again, what he can't legislate, he's going to do through executive order. But he's, from what the Heritage Foundation is saying, is he's gearing up for a new executive order to forgive these student loans.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I'd like to see in his job description, Article 2, Section 2, where it says he has the authority to forgive student loans.
I don't remember
that part.
Now, isn't that a contract? You'd be making a contract null and void.
Exactly.
You know, you do a student loan, you say, I agree to pay you back over so much period of time, provided you give me the money to take my courses. Now, going to college is voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
It's not mandatory. It's not a draft. You choose to go to college. You choose the course. You choose the direction you're going to go into. So you're
right.
Choosing the price range and the product.
Plus, you choose how to pay for it. Because you may go over in more numbers of years and pay for it out of your pocket through your earnings or whatever. Don't even take a loan. Or you may decide to take a loan and go to a community college. You may decide to go to some other school.
Now, this is true. Now, I couldn't afford a big four-year college. I went to community college. I worked at 1.3 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But I paid everything cash up front because I couldn't get the scholarships. And the grants were completely out because my brother used the Pell Grant, and Pell Grant was good for only one child per household. But now they want to turn around and say that, you know, the waitress or the construction worker who didn't go to college is going to take over the responsibility of paying back these loans. You know, the taxpayer dime is going to pay back the loan, not the student. But the college, was not chosen by the waitress or the construction worker or the guy next door or me or you. You know, I had nothing to do with this person down the street deciding to go to college and taking a loan out. So why am I going to pay for it?
Well, it seems like anything that the government does is done for political posturing. And what Obama apparently wants to do is gain favor with the younger generation and try and bring those voters back to his side.
Well, he's pandering to these Occupy groups because they're all asking them, asking him for free college.
I don't think he's pandering. I think he's actually behind those Occupy groups.
Ooh, that's a right cross.
Well, he is, because he's supporting them whenever people talk about the Tea Party, which I think the Tea Party is a great group of people. They're just normal citizens. Most, the great majority of them work or they're responsible. And they can see our country being taken away from us, and they want it back, and they want to stop the destruction of the nation. The Occupy Wall Street group is disenfranchised with the establishment. They never define the establishment. They define it as Wall Street banks, mortgage companies, free market, free enterprise. But I think if you talk to them closely, you'll find out that they're disenfranchised with government just as much as they're disenfranchised with the free market system. And the people who are not paid thugs, for lack of a better word, I think are worth talking to, because I think they can actually be swayed to understand that the system is not broken. We have the best system in the world as far as a constitutionally limited republic. But the system that's broken is the people who are running it in Washington. And I think they understand that, from a gut level. They just have to discuss it, in words so it comes to light.
Well, now, that's very true. Now, Occupy Wall Street has had people associated with it that are from the Communist Party. And now the unions, the SEIU has openly supported them, the AFL-CIO has openly supported them, the teachers' union. Matter of fact, the teachers' union gave Occupy Wall Street a storage unit just a few blocks away from the protest so they can store all these donations. And I came across this. I'm going to play this clip. This is a guy from the AFL-CIO. Now, AFL-CIO says they're not giving them money or other types of, serious support. You got to listen to this one.
And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm willing to be arrested, and I'll get out of jail and come right back down the street. Was on a call with us tonight and said, I want you to communicate to Occupy groups. We're with them. And he's directing local labor movements to put resources on the ground to help, including lawyers, including meeting spaces, including whatever we need. So I want to be a resource back to the national. But they said, do not be heavy-handed. Do not come in and try to take over them. So Let the local movement and the young people who are there feed this energy. But if this is really modeled after the Arab Spring, which we understand it is, then you've got to be willing to stay in the street. And when the clashes break out, I mean, that's what we've got to be willing to really understand. Like, what we're getting into here, you know, we are going to peacefully get this on our side, but they're not going to peacefully give it to us. So we're going to have to find strength in one another. We're willing to take some risks, stand with one another, and fight for tech. So if we see the cops coming, you know, we've got a whole hand and we know what we're in for. Get arrested, get out of jail, and right back down. So I really encourage us to...
All right, I don't know, because it's not the greatest recording, because someone was recording them, I guess, off their phone or whatever. But he was saying... this guy says, I'm telling you right now, I'm willing to be arrested, and I'll get out of jail and come right back down the damn street. If you don't know me, I do work for the AFL-CIO, and the president of the AFL-CIO was on a call with us tonight and said, I want you to communicate to the local Occupy groups that we are with them, and he's directing local labor movements to put resources on the ground to help, including lawyers, including meeting spaces, including whatever we need. So I want you to resource back to the national. But they said, do nothing at the end. Do not try to come in and take over this. Let the local movement and young people feed this energy. But this is really modeled after the Arab Spring, which I understand it is. Then we've got to be willing to stay in the streets, and when the clashes break out, that's when we've got to be willing to really understand like what we are getting into here. You know, we are not going to beat you, no, and we're no going to get peacefully get on our side, but not going to peacefully give it to us. So we are badly need to find strength in one another before we take some risks. We've got to stand with one another and fight like heck. So if we see the cops coming, you got to hold hands, and we know what we're in for. Get arrested, get out of jail, get right back down.
That's terrible. That's terrible.
Well, they have now been occupying museums. What does a museum have to do with Occupy Wall Street?
It has nothing whatsoever. It seems like all they want to do is just bring down, you know, the capitalistic system, the best society that the world's ever seen.
Well, Jackie DeSalvo, who's in Occupy Wall Street, she says, we're hoping that this will inspire them to take on more militant tactics. In fact, they're willing to support more militant tactics might mean that they're willing to start doing more. Sounds like they're willing to escalate this up into violence. And they have also, just I think it was yesterday, occupied one of the banks. People are in there just trying to do the normally daily business, but they go into the bank and just an everyday Joe Blow.
Mm-hmm.
Probably their next-door neighbor, but they wouldn't let them do their business transactions. You know, why aren't you camping out on the White House lawn?
Well, that's why I said I think the White House is really encouraging it. Well, they are, and Obama came out and he said he supported the Occupy Wall Street group. He disassociates himself from the Tea Party group, but he supports the Occupy Wall Street group.
Yeah. The Occupy Los Angeles one, the person that's leading it is a known Marxist, Mario Brito. Brito? B-R-I-T-O. Now tell me that the Communist Party is not behind a lot of this.
We know they are. I don't know they are, but from what you just said, I know they are, but... their tactics are pure communism. They want to break down the free market system. But again, I have to say one thing. I think there's union thugs, and we know there's union thugs from the recording that you just played. But there's a lot of people who are ignorant pawns in the whole mass. And they feel that, you know, Wall Street is bad because they've been told Wall Street's bad, you know, for forever through their classes, through society, through the media, and every place else. And I think they just see it as a social event that they can protest and do something that's similar to what their parents did in the 60s when the parents were protesting Vietnam War and things like that. And I don't think that the great majority of of them have any idea of what they're really protesting. They're just going along with the flow. We have to, you know, as a parent, I have to explain to my kids, you know, what's going on. We as a society have to explain to people what's really happening, and I don't know how to do that. That's a really tough situation. We have to fight the mainstream media.
Well, that's the major problem. The mainstream media is focusing on this, but yet the Tea Party in one day had a larger crowd,
mm-hmm.
in just a one-day march. And this has been going on since September 23rd, I believe. And they don't have a message.
No, you know, they don't. No message whatsoever.
No, as a matter of fact, I had on one of the previous shows, I have it here, the Occupy Wall Street, they're working on a manifesto. And this is on the Occupy Wall Street website, the American People's New Economic Charter. And, Pete, you've got to read this thing. I mean, if you did, you'd be rolling over hysterically.
I don't think so. I'd be rolling over, but I don't think it would be hysterically.
Oh, man. Now, I had it summarized somewhere else, but I'm going to have to send you the link on this one. And some of the things they're demanding on this, and it's going to come out November 20th. And I'm telling you, once it hits the newspapers November 20th, that's when you're going to see the rest of society turn against them. They went from 54% of the public were in support of them. Now it's down to 37%. We got a caller coming in. Let me bring this person in here. And area code 901, you're on the air with Ann and Pete. Who am I speaking to?
This is Peter Steele. How you doing?
Oh, hi, Perry. How you doing?
All right. It's
what's
Pete.
Hi, Perry. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
Listen, Southern Sense, everybody who calls your show do have to agree with you and Pete.
Yeah.
Well, I ain't got nothing to say. Y'all have a good time.
No. I'm joking about that.
Well, okay. I'm in support of the Occupy Memphis group here in Memphis, and they are addressing some issues that's germane to our environment, political environment, financial environment, and just environment, period, you know, and I support them wholeheartedly because I think that every group or every section of the country that has a group has different issues that they want to voice and you know, say something about. But I'm totally surprised conservatives and Republicans who did not see or could not realize that this sort of thing that happened with the Arab Spring is going to be happening in the United States, too. We were warned quite some time ago that discontent with the government is coming. We seen that first with the Tea Party. Well, not first, but we seen a version of it with the Tea Party protesting. They were protesting the government as well. But they got assimilated into the government, became congressmen, and hadn't done anything, you know, anything. Just left their platform and anything, and then let Obama run roughshod over them. So that was just a political ploy. I think if we could have a revolution without political parties, i.e. the Democrats or the Republicans, then I think America will get somewhere then. Until then, they'll be used as pawns, like you said, by the unions, the socialists, the anarchists, and all of those people who have hidden agendas.
Why is it not Occupy Washington rather than Occupy Wall Street?
They've been occupying Washington, sir, for generations. You know, I remember when I was a kid back in 76, I mean, no, back in the early 70s, they was occupying Washington by the Vietnam War. You know, they occupied Washington by all types of different disagreements that they have. They stay down there. You don't have to be this group here. I'll holler at you a little later on, man. You know, they've occupied about, you know, a whole lot of different things.
Well, Perry, the difference is that there was groups that worked within the system. Yeah, you did your protest. The groups that worked within the system. Yes, you did your protest. They weren't violent, but you also influenced your elected officials by working with them, by recrafting legislation or by getting stuff repealed. That's the main difference between the Tea Party and some of the things you saw happening in the 60s and 70s. You did have violent outbursts in the 60s and 70s, yes, but not to this type of a scale.
Well, no, we ain't got to that scale yet, Southern Sense.
Well, that's
this
what I'm afraid
preliminary.
Of. No, this is what I'm afraid of. And Van Jones predicted this. He said, wait. He said, in October, you're going to see it splashed across the news. And Van Jones already said he had this planned. He already said he's behind it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people behind it. Like I said, you know, there's a lot of people dissatisfied with this economy. There's a lot of people dissatisfied with this political situation we're in. Because I can't tell the difference between the Democrats and Republicans. And I think right now the Republican Party is doing a good job of keeping Barack Obama in office. Because the candidate they have are horrible. They're horrible. And Obama can mop the floor up with any one of them.
Oh, well, I don't know. I really don't know because I have
a funny
feeling.
Which one do you think can give him a good fight?
Oh, I got a funny feeling. No matter who the nominee is on the Republican side, I get a funny feeling people will have a choice whether or not they return Obama for four more years or hold their nose and put someone else in office. And I think the majority of people are going to hold their nose.
I don't think so.
Well, hopefully we won't have to hold our nose. I hope someone comes through that's a true conservative.
Yeah.
Right now, I have a little bit of a problem. I mean, I like a lot of people, but there's something about most people that I don't care for. But we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, because I was listening to Rick Santorum the other day talking on it. He was on CNN, but, you know, they did a little thing. He was in, a little place, a steakhouse, a restaurant, doing a fundraising. He was just, you know, making some insane comments about Obama. Okay, he was talking about this Iraqi withdrawal. Now, he failed to mention that George W. Bush signed it back in 2008, and it's a status of forces agreement called a SOFA agreement. Therefore, it's legally binding in international and national laws of both countries and through the UN. So Barack Obama would be abiding by the laws that George Bush signed in. You know, you see what I'm saying? But he's talking about Barack gave up Iraq. And then he was coming with this crazy stuff to Leon Panetta talking about the Iraqi people need to make up their mind. Do they want us to stay or go? They've been telling them to go for the last 5 years.
Well,
they don't want them there.
You do have a problem, though, because at this point, Iraq was asking Obama for 3 years to negotiate with them to keep troops in there to keep stability. And when Barack Obama did not show that he was seriously considering any negotiation, they have now turned to Iran. Now, do we want Iran and Iraq to become partners where we could have been partners?
It's too late. When we installed that puppet government, Malaki, he's a secret. Sunni, what's the other one, sir?
A Shiite.
Shiite, he's a Shiite too. They're both of them the same people. We helped Iran whoop somebody they couldn't whoop in 8 years.
We
helped them.
But we could have had some minor presence in there, just enough to keep it stable and then keep Ahmadinejad in check. Now at this point, it's unleashed. You've let the dragon out of the cage.
I respectfully disagree with you. There is no stability in the Middle East. There is none. As long as America sides with Israel on everything Israel does and shows partiality towards the Zionist agenda, there's not going to be anything like that. Because, see, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan can deal effectively with the Chinese because the Chinese don't take sides. They use money, not bombs, for diplomacy. They buy what they want. They don't have to use the military. And they got the second most well-equipped military in the world. Do you know that, I want to say this, do you know that China spends $95 billion on their military and we spend $680 billion on our military?
Well,
Perry,
I still think had we had some influence, if we give up all influence with Iraq, we now have complete instability because now you have partners between Iraq and Iran. We could have prevented that partnership. We could have, if not completely prevented, at least control it.
You can't do it.
The same thing with Egypt and Libya, too. I mean, the same thing with Egypt and Libya. They were despicable presidents and dictators there, but they were still working in conjunction with the United States. I mean, they were helping us on the war on terror. And now that Gaddafi's gone, Libya's going pure Muslim, Sharia law. And the same thing's going to happen in Egypt. And now that we take our forces out of Iraq, like Annie says, Iran's going to come in and fill the vacuum. We're also losing all influence in Afghanistan because of the silly rules of engagement, and we're not allowing our soldiers to complete their mission.
Right. See,
so it's,
America,
it's upside.
America's good at starting war, but they just don't want to win them.
No, it's not America. It's the politicians. And when the politicians get in power, they try and fill some political need. They don't do what's best for the nation. They don't do what's
right.
best for the you know, the cause. They, I mean, they hamstring the military so the military can't complete its mission. And the same thing with Iraq. When George Bush went in there and took out Saddam Hussein, I was grateful for that because he was, you know, causing trouble for the West, for us in particular. But
mm-hmm.
if Iraq became a successful democracy in the Middle East, it would be extremely strong and it would be an ally for the United States. But since we haven't really given them the support that they need and we've more or less turned their back on them and now we're pulling out, they have to go someplace else like Iran to maintain stability. And it's at the great detriment to the United States, in my opinion.
Well, sir, I respectfully disagree with you. You know, I respectfully disagree with you because when America... George Bush took out Saddam Hussein. They had parties all over Iran. Parties all over Iran. That's who they really wanted to get. The United States wasn't the only person after him. You know, Iran still demanded reparations for what they did to them 8 years when they fought them.
All right, Perry, I'm going to play you a clip. And Donald Trump is no conservative. I still say that he is a dupe for Obama. But he said this back in April of this year. I'm going to play this, and I'll play up a follow-up clip that came from just the other day. Hang on just a second here.
Go ahead.
What we're doing, and I said very simply, with respect to Libya, I'm interested in Libya if we take the oil. If we don't take the oil, no interest. We have to have, look, if we have wars, we have to win the war.
Right.
What we do is we take over a country, and then we hand the keys to people that don't like us. I'll tell you what, Iraq, 100% Iran takes over Iraq after we leave. And what really happens with Iraq is they want the oil fields. And I have it on very good authority that Iran probably won't even be shooting a bullet because they're getting along with the Iraqi leaders better than we are. After all of those lives and after all of the money we spent. And if that's going to happen, we take the oil.
Well, how do you think that would impact our relationship with other Arab countries if we go in and say, hey, we're taking the oil, or at least until we're paid back what we think we spent? How do you think that would affect the Arab nations?
Who cares? Who cares? They've been taking advantage of us for years. They're ripping us off. They wouldn't exist if it weren't for us. Look at Kuwait. Saddam Hussein takes over Kuwait. We then drive him back, lose lives, spend billions of dollars. We get Red Adair and his groups to put out all the fires when he said all the oil was. We spend tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars. We hand them back the country. We give it back. They didn't pay us 10 cents. We give them back the country. And yet, you know what? If you go to Kuwait right now, they won't invest in the United States because they don't feel we're growing. They don't feel we're a good country for investment. They've told me the return on investment is not good enough in the United States. We gave back the country. We're stupid. Our leaders are stupid.
President Obama is talking about raising taxes.
All right. That was April. All right. That was just 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is what he said this past week.
Well, it's happening just as I said it would. Iraq is becoming very, very, very close to Iran. Iran will end up taking over Iraq. They're all happy that the United States has been forced to leave. Our negotiators don't know what they're doing. Our president has no clue. We're going to be leaving Iraq. We're going to be giving, handing on a silver platter, the second largest oil reserves in the world to Iran. Now, I've been saying this for 2 years, 3 years. You go back and check. Nobody else has said it but Donald Trump. I turn out to be right. They're going to be giving Iraq and the second largest oil reserves in the world to Iran. And, man, we are really, really being led by stupid people.
Now, how many lives and how much money have we spent, and now you just walk away?
I just disagree with one thing he said.
What's that?
That I've been saying that for more than 5 years, ever since the first Gulf War and then the second Gulf War. I've been saying that ever since the second Gulf War. Everything he said is totally correct. That's why I said, the United States love to fight war, like Donald said, and then give them everything back. But what amazes me is why do we go to countries that are rich and we have to spend our money to build their infrastructure? Like I said on my show, what's wrong with Iraq rebuilding its own self? Why do we have, you know something, I don't know, back in 1976 when I was in the Army, they started outsourcing. But when the Army had its own facilities, its own supplies, we ran a more leaner, stronger machine. It really started in Vietnam, the outsourcing. The outsourcing is just to make the wealthy even more wealthy. That's why people have questions about foreign policy. You take billions of dollars, you give it to Saudi Arabia, who already got more money than they need. They, in turn, turn around and buy Raytheon, McDonnell Douglas, and GE military equipment. And the whole cycle just repeats itself. Donald is absolutely correct in his assessment. Absolutely. But I'm wondering when America going to wake up and see the coffee or smell the coffee or the napalm.
Pete,
yeah.
What would you say to Perry on this one? Because I don't think he's going to understand what we're seeing.
No, well, I agree with Donald in part in that the United States has terrible leadership, and I don't agree with taking their oil because we have more oil and. We have more oil in the United States than all of those countries combined, and if we just wanted to make ourselves self-sufficient, all we need to do is allow the private sector to extract and develop the oil without government support. So we have plenty of oil. But I don't agree with going overseas. I don't agree with nation building necessarily, but I do agree with having a stable force over there. And I want
for what?
I want Iraq to be a safe and secure democracy. That's all I want. And I think that's what the Iraqi people want also. I mean, when we took out Saddam Hussein, there was jubilation in the streets. People were I remember the first election where people had that little ink on their fingers and they held it up and they were saying, you know, this is the first time in our life that we've been able to have a free and fair election. And that was great. And they wanted, freedom. They wanted democracy, just like everyone wants to be free. No one wants to be ruled by a tyrant. And we're just letting that all go. And I don't quite understand why.
I do.
Perry, we're coming down to our last few minutes here. Want to thank you for the call. Pete and I are going to end up closing this up. We have the chat room is still going. Let's see what we have. The White House insider has told Oberman, that escalating to violence may be planned for the Occupy protests. We've been saying that. It does sound like the word is coming out that the violence is going to escalate, which, Pete, brings me back to that FCC planned testing on the 9th. It's kind of strange that it's being planned at this time, isn't it?
I totally agree.
Well, they've been doing that before. I've seen them do that many times. But, you know, what we need to be worried about is this cyber war that Leon Panetta is talking about. That's the one that's going to take us out because our computer grids run just about our daily lives. We're going to be on a cyber attack here shortly. I think it's supposed to be coming in 2012. The United States is going to be seriously tested because we're behind most of the world in our broadband. And they said we're going to be seriously tested. A whole lot of systems are going to be crashed. Cities are going to be without utilities. And we're going to really be going through some changes. So, like I said, this is the American awakening. Get ready for it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Perry. Thank you for your closing. All right. Thank you for your closing statement.
All right.
Good night. Okay. We were talking about the FCC, and I am saying it's really strange that they have planned this FCC test. Now, they knew through Van Jones and through other sources that this Occupy Wall Street was going to occur at this time. So the FCC test, I'm thinking, is a precursor to martial law.
I wouldn't doubt it whatsoever. I mean, it certainly allows martial law to be ushered in. No doubt about it. It's scary. I'm really worried about the future of our country.
No, I think when you get back to your office, you and Keith are going to be sitting together head-to-head on this one.
Yep. No, I agree. I totally agree. Keith is a very great man. He actually worked for Dan Benichuk's campaign.
Oh,
and,
good.
Helped Dan get elected, and he quit that job just a while ago and decided to help us out because he has great confidence in the message that, you know, I'm talking about. So I'm very grateful for that.
Yes, it is. And he sounds like he's a really good campaign manager. And it's funny that, you know, I was talking about that subject as he was calling in on it. People have to be aware that the FCC is going to do an emergency alert system test, and it's going to cover everything, radio, TV, cable, satellite, and the internet, and it's going to knock out your signals for anywhere from 2 to 5 minutes, so they claim, and they will take over with this emergency broadcast. I'm telling you, it's the first time they're doing this nationwide, and it may be a precursor to complete censorship and martial law. Maybe not tomorrow, but the Occupy Wall Street demonstration could be a good excuse to clamp down on us.
And it could be a precursor to a manufactured situation, crisis, right before the 2012 elections.
And all we need is one big Tea Party march, and then they can turn around and say, oh, look at those terrorists coming down on Washington. Anyone wanting to know the link, it's up in the chat room. I put it up there before on FCC Encyclopedia something or other. It is up in the chat room that you can find it. Or just go to the FCC.gov website, and you can get the link directly to the test. It's up there. The FCC has admitted that they are doing the test, and they're doing it for government control. So, honestly, Pete, we're down to our last 4 minutes. You got a closing statement.
Well, I'm just real, real grateful that I was able to join you today. Like I say, I love this country. This country is by far the best nation the world has ever seen, and we're a free people. You know, our forefathers, I'm so grateful to them because they won a war against tyranny, which was amazing, against the most powerful nation on earth. But what they did on top of that was they installed a constitutionally limited government which protected the rights of a free people. And now we're just willingly giving that up. Not giving up, but we're allowing it to be taken by our government. And we have to fight, not physically, but we have to fight through the ballot box. We have to fight through ideas, and we have to make sure that we don't allow our representatives to trample our rights. And that's what I'm fighting for. So that's how I feel.
Oh, that's absolutely perfect, which is why you're running for Senate in Michigan. Anyone Michigan. Wants to know, just go to peterkanichi.com, and I put that link up in the chat room also. So I want to thank everyone listening, everyone that has come into the chat room, everyone that has called in. We will be back on Friday, and I'm going to be working with Mike on what our Friday show will be. So we'll be here with Cool Mike, and hopefully, Peter, you'll have some time to call in on Friday also.
Okay, I'll look forward to it.
All right. I'm going to finish this off with Krista Branch again, and her link is up on the homepage for this show, KristaBranch.com, and this is her song, I Am America. So good night until I talk to you again on Friday. Lecture me.